crazy night when I cried myself to sleep. Now melodrama never makes me weep anymore, 'cause I haven't got time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain. I haven't the need for the pain. Not since I've known you. You showed me how to leave myself behind, how to turn down the noise in my mind. Now I haven't got time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain. I haven't the need for the pain. Not since I suffering was the only thing made me feel I was alive. Thought that's just how much it cost to survive in this world, till you showed me
interesting piece of music. Nothing I've ever specifically considered airing on this program. But in the middle of the night, and I don't know where I was in the car, and I heard this, and it spoke to me. Good evening. Jeffrey Bennett here on this Thursday night. 13th day of July. I think of the words of this piece by Carly Simon. Not music that I listen to often, but she's quite good with so much of what she's done. Haven't got time for the pain. I've suffered much pain this last couple of years. Physical. I guess the emotional has been stronger. Going through so many years of issues. Not specifically of a personal nature. And I came across something that I wrote over 20 years ago. I guess in some respects much has changed in those years, but so much has remained the same. There's times, I guess, that I find it worthwhile to reread this column to myself, just to look back, to remember, or maybe to forget. January 24th, 2003. I guess that I had felt this coming on for several months. Continual headaches, accelerated heart rate after eating, multiple naps throughout the day, anger, frustration. You know the routine. And I wrote those words how many years ago? Could have been today. But I asked myself then, did I have cancer? Heart disease or just old phartitis disease? I didn't know. Yet, as with most men of my age bracket at that time, I guess I didn't really want to know. By the previous Thursday night, I was so ill that I couldn't sleep for more than 30 minutes at a time. My whole body was sore with muscular contractions, aching stomach, lower back pain. Diarrhea was becoming an hourly occurrence with me then. And that previous Friday morning at about 3:30 a.m., my wife called the family physician who immediately sent me to the emergency room of our local hospital. Well, I told them that I would shower first, that I might wash the stench of sickness from my body. And I did so, and then went to lie down on cool sheets for just a few minutes to relax before we left for the hospital. And I then slept for 4 hours. The longest period of rest I'd had all night. My daughter and wife had to work the next morning, but my son was off, so it was decided that he would drive me to the hospital. On that day, I arranged for a rebroadcast of Chapter 1 of All the King's Men on WWCR to carry the program through the Friday hour. Promptly, I went back to sleep. Now, my wife came home to check on me between classes and saw I was even worse. She became insistent that I was to get ready to go right now. And so, in my turtle way of moving in that condition, I packed and we left. And as we arrived at the hospital, they brought out the wheelchair, which I promptly declined. I mean, I may have been ill, but I was not ready for geriatric care. Not yet. And after a battery of tests, including pokes and pricks and a series of blood pressure tests, x-rays, oh, joy of joys, and so much more, the prognosis included that my lungs were full of crud, overall dehydration, physical exhaustion due to overwork, lack of rest, poor nutrition, too damn much stress. Go home, drink lots of clear fluid. And I thought, well, gee, vodka's clear. The doctor continued, get plenty of rest. Take time off from your workloads. Stay out of brothels. Of course, the last one I had no problem with. I haven't had vodka in years, so I had to take the advice on the other two, even though it was not going to be easy. I mean, come on, folks. Who in the hell said life was easy anyway? At that time, I had just completed 3 out of 4 years of both personal and corporate tax returns with a fourth and final year to go. 2 weeks of grueling work to prepare for my brother Ray arriving in Phoenix to complete all the necessary work to file those 16 returns. And then he and I each arrive at conclusion through different mechanisms. Mine is Arizona laid back. His was New York in a minute. Ever notice how someone from New York has all the answers but can't hear anything else because their mouth is always moving, thereby blocking their ability to hear? Well, that's how it was. Which, of course, compounded my stress levels. I mean, life ain't easy, but somebody's got to do it. Well, as with my own so-called illness at the time, most Americans don't wish to know of the nature of the illness which permeates this land. That previous week, the nation remembered the 30th anniversary of the diabolical Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision allowing women the right to murder their unborn children. And with that decision, America allowed a true Holocaust to overshadow all others in history combined. The greatest atrocity known to have ever taken place, and we the people just stood idly by and turned away from the silent screaming. God, shame on us. In the words of one of our readers, the Federal Observer back then, he said, abortion has no place in politics. Free choice is the democratic way. Having just come from Costa Maya and Cozumel, those women should be so lucky to have abortion options. Abject poverty in each shack that I went by, I counted 5 to 6 children, with overpopulation a threat to all. Leave women alone. The sad state of children in the world is horrific, and the U.S. is no better. Stop cramming moral beliefs down another's throat, just as many do not want Islam crammed down theirs. Well, the problems with that statement I just shared with you are several, and while I do agree with several of the writer's points, I frankly was not concerned with what may or may not be accepted or needed in other nations, only with that which has murdered at that time in excess of 42 million babies in these United States of America. And as to the writer's concerns regarding moral beliefs, it is specifically the lack of morals in this nation which had allowed this problem to escalate. I mean, come on, follow the money trail. Then talk to me about morals. It's a life, stupid. In the words of one of the listeners of our then daily radio program, Perspectives on America, he says, I was listening to your show today about abortion. I know how to put the non-viable tissue mass argument to rest for good. And he continued, remember a number of years ago, two nesting California condors laid some eggs. And everyone went wild about the event because it was the first time something like that had happened in many years. Well, next time that happens, send out a press release that you're going to take the condor eggs and make a Western omelet out of them. Oh, claim that it's just non-viable tissue mass in the eggs and not potential condor's chicks. Watch how fast you end up in a federal detention center. But you see, my friends, most people in this nation don't wish to hear the truth as to how our nation has been completely taken over by the enemy. They can't see it. They don't want to see it or even hear about it. It doesn't matter by what name they are called, socialist, communist, fascist, or globalist. Americans also care not who their puppeteers, the CFR, the Trilats, Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Bones, the Masons. Each of them are intertwined beyond the average person's comprehension. Give the average person in this country a six-pack and a big screen, surround sound, theater-style television on Stupid Bowl Sunday, and they're just as happy as a brother and sister in heat living in the Appalachians. But that's an illness for another day, another column, by someone else. This nation is inundated with the illness of spending what they do not have. Easy money, easy credit. cheap imported goods from other lands have turned us into the greediest peoples on earth. We're allowed to exist only due to the benevolence of the great Walmart of China. We awaken each day to the realization that we can no longer afford to live in the nation of our ancestors, that due to globalism and free trade agreements like NAFTA, millions of real jobs have been exported to other lands and will never return. Not until a true leader comes along who will facilitate meaningful legislation giving tax breaks to these companies to return to our shores, while rescinding those which have previously been granted to those who left and choose not to return. When American automobile manufacturers moved to Mexico some years ago, they employed local labor at considerably lower wage and benefit rates than those previously enjoyed by our brothers and sisters in this country. Funny thing is that the Mexican laborers couldn't even afford to buy what they build. Is this the future for our once great republic? Makes you kind of ill, doesn't it? Specifically as we look back these past two decades. This nation has effectively been bankrupt since 1933. Thank you, Mr. Roosevelt. You think our Constitution just became somewhat null and void under Joey and Barack? No. Our Constitution's been pretty well null and void since 1933, just as if it had never existed. Financial gurus, people like Alan Greenspan, have continued to perpetuate the myth of solvency. Over 1 million jobs per month, all the way back in 2003, were then being lost in this nation. It would never be replaced with meaningful positions. The days of 20 and 30 year employment with a single company are long gone, as are the pensions and the perks. Hey, baby, cooking the books. That's the truth and the way. And why not? For the biggest crook of all is our own government. For no government in history had ever manipulated the books, nor its people, as ours has. Oh, the goals of communism have been all too easily fulfilled while the greatest generation rested upon their victories, allowing their children and grandchildren to spend nearly six decades shacked up with Rip Van Winkle. But I look back to this commentary of January of 2003. We's going to wall, baby. Wall. The target date was February. What year? Where back then were the heroes of yesterday? The Joseph McCarthy's, the George C. Patton's, the Douglas MacArthur's, those who recognized the enemy and who knew what it was going to take to get the damn job done. To go back this 20-odd years, our military leaders were more mere polyester shells of those great men of the past, and yet were more hamstrung by the machinations of politics than at any time in history. Back in 2003, we spent 18 months telegraphing our intentions and threatening to go to war against an enemy. Just who is our real enemy? Who was it then? Bin Laden? Saddam Hussein? What were we going to war for? Homeland Security? Oil? Israel? My God, we pump enough money into Israel each year, even now. But they ought to be able to care for their own damned interests, whatever they may be. And their leader back then, Ariel Sharon, had proven that he was capable of anything in order to get what he wanted. This one was so damn important to this nation about Israel that we are brought to our knees in order to placate them. What are our national interests in the Gaza Strip? George Washington warned us about long-term foreign entanglements. And our president back in 2003, Junior George Bush, oh, he was his daddy's boy, all right. And he followed the party line all the way. The question was, which party? And yet the nation still believes that Joseph McCarthy was an evil man? I don't know. Even this many years later, since this column I'm sharing with you, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Because back in '03, from the depths of Harlem, cometh former commander-in-chief, Willie Jeff Clinton. And by the way, if ever I would have approved of abortion, it would have been for his mother. Clinton stating that Bush was wrong with his approach to tax reduction and that we should be developing what is tantamount to Hillary care. As if Hillary cared a damn about anything but her own career. National health care wasn't going to resolve anything in this land. It would only bring us more governmental control. Heart disease, cancer, diabetes, common cold could all be dealt with more affordably and with better success than that offered by the sanctioned American medical complex. Emergency is one thing, as are setting bones, but as for the rest, take responsibility, begin to care for yourselves, always, in all ways. America, heal thyself. Was I stressed back then? Am I still? You betcha I am. And yet, my friends, my armor is too strong to give up the fight just yet, and you had better be prepared to join. For we are at war, spiritually, physically, financially, and morally. The time cometh to take the medicine and kick a little ass. For I had miles to go before I sleep. And 20 and a half years later, I'm still fighting. And as I ended my column back then, without apology, and I signed it. And in these days, I look back to the words of John Coffey in a just unbelievable film, The Green Mile. John Coffey, prisoner, who says, "I'm tired, boss. Mostly I'm tired of people being ugly to each other. I'm tired of all the pain I feel and hear in the world every day. There's too much of it. It's like pieces of glass in my head all the time." And that is how I feel. Not just this day, but each day, every day. Whether I'm going on the air or not. Miles to go before I sleep. Is that still the case? I hope so, because I'm not prepared to give up the fight yet. Maybe that's why I'm still here. Maybe the good Lord sees fit to have me here for a reason. I don't know. I don't know. It is interesting to share this column with you. How little has changed. We could change a few of the names in here. But that's about it. A question for us, Mr. Michael. If you're there. Now, 20-some-odd minutes ago, he said, I got to get this music as I go to the bathroom. I don't know if that's the case or not. Oh, you could do that. I was going to say go dance with Kim, but no, that's just... Let's keep rolling with this piece. I'll be back in a moment or so.
Out of open up and drinking all that white light pouring down from the heaven. Haven't got time for the pain, oh pain. I haven't got room for the pain, oh pain. I haven't got need for the pain. Not since I know you. I haven't got time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain. For the pain. No, I haven't got need for the pain. I haven't got time. No, I haven't got time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain. No, no, no. I haven't got need for the pain. No, no, no. I haven't got time for the pain. No, no, no. I haven't got room for the pain. Time for the pain is all in my past. No, 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 no.
It has been an interesting week, a month, a year, a couple of years, whatever the case may be. And yet I have writers out there and friends that continue to contribute. Charlie Dickens and I had a lengthy conversation the other day, and part of it came about because of an image I had come across. And that image said so much to me. And I sent that image to Charlie. I said, if you got a few minutes, give me a call. And he did. And of course, we both understood what the image was about. It was an image from a story that his great-great-grandfather had written so many years ago called Great Expectations. And I said to Charles, I said, you know, that strikes so hard. I said, I think you should give that some serious consideration for a title for an article. Fell out of his chair. He said, I think you're right. A couple of hours ago, he submitted it to me. I've not had time to work with it yet. I'm looking forward to reading it. Looking forward to the comparisons. What are some of the other battles and insane things taking place in this country that just drive me nuts? I think about growing up as a young kid, the amount of time I spent with my great-grandmother's, Maud, who had a black man who did a lot of gardening work and stuff like that with her, taking care of her moderate piece of property in Ravinia. I've spoken to you about Ravinia in the past. The commonality of Ravinia that I have with a doctor who's a regular listener to our program now. We both attended Ravinia many times, massive music festivals. And by the way, Carly Simon will be appearing at Ravinia this month, along with a couple of other names I can't recall right now. But I begin to look at this history. I think about Walter. What a nice gentleman he was. I remember the man that used to pick up our trash in our neighborhood on whatever day trash day was back then. A black man. I didn't care about the color. A man who picks up the trash and would have a smile and a good morning, Jeff Common. And we'd just chat. I'd be in my bedroom window standing up saying good morning to him. And you look at what we're facing today. Look at the insanity. If one were to be foolish enough to believe sanctimonious leftist loonies, we'd think that the institution of slavery began in the American South in 1619 as a way for nasty white Southerners to oppress blacks and for no other reason. But it's all leftist drivel, which is far from the truth. Though not nearly enough people today realize that, thanks to the balderdash that is passed off as history in most public school systems. Recently, my friend and writer Al Benson came across a book that dealt with much of this. The name of it was Slavery 101, written by Loughlane Seabrook, published by Sea Raven Press. Recently relocated to Cody, Wyoming, a town that Al Benson had great memories of in his life. Seabrook has done an excellent job of dealing with the issue of slavery and dispelling many of the myths that have surrounded it for decades. And yet we take a look at what's going on in California. Chicago! Oh, my God, what's going on in Chicago? Oh, they found a way. They're going to provide reparations to some 150-odd specific people in Chicago that, oh, my God, their family history. And then when they're done, they want to put together some $10 million more to take care of others. Well, one of the myths that Mr. Seabrook had demolished was that slavery was solely a white institution and an invention, which is what most of us were taught. And in regard to blacks participating in slavery, Seabrook noted on page 15 that no region on earth has been more dependent on slavery over a longer period of time, practiced slavery more aggressively and widely on its own populace, or allowed slavery to become more entrenched than Africa. Africa has been so intimately involved with slavery over such an immense duration, with slave majorities thought to be as high as 90% of the population in some regions, that its name today is synonymous with the institution. The Great Womb of Slavery. Yankee abolitionist Charles Sumner correctly called it. And Seabrook noted that slavery was so intrinsic to the early African way of life that one time slaves, known by their own people as black ivory, could be found in nearly every African society. These were not merely insignificant traces of slavery, as African apologists maintain, but rather true African slave societies built upon and around the bondage of their own people, employing some of the most brutal and sadistic forms of slavery ever recorded. Thank God, Africans were practicing slavery on themselves for thousands of years before the arrival of Europeans. In point of fact, African slavery was coeval with the existence of the African race, and thus had existed and has existed in Africa since its first Negro settlement predating even the founding of ancient Egypt over 5,000 years ago. And so, restated by Seabrook, pre-European Africa has been practicing slavery, servitude, vassalage, and serfdom on its own people for thousands of years in forms far more brutal than anything found in the American South. In fact, Africa is the only region that engaged continually in the West African, European, American slave trade for its full 424 years from start to finish. Well, we realize that that's not what the left wants to hear. But it seems that Mr. Seabrook has done the homework. He's got a pretty fair bibliography at the back of the book. African slavery was, for a very large part, by and for Africans. Everybody rails about the European, the American part, and the African slave trade. Well, what about the African involvement in it? European and American slave traders, who were almost all from the north, bought slaves from black African chiefs and brought them over here. Where's the guilt for the Africans that sold those slaves to begin with? Mentioning them doesn't do much for the white guilt part of this scenario, though, does it? So we'll just kind of neglect to mention them. In fact, let's, to remove the black guilt, let's just change the history. And so the leftist historians play word games and hope we don't notice, but with books like Mr. Seabrook's out there, there's no hope they can cover it all up. So some of us will find the truth and we'll pass it along, even though the present regime labels the truth as, oh my God, hate speech and misinformation. Allow me, in addition to Al Benson's commentary, to share an interesting story with you about a man named Anthony Johnson, the pioneer of American slavery. You see, the first slave owner in America was not only a black man, he went to court and demanded it. Oh, hallelujah, Jesus, political correctness must die. Well, simple. Year 1654. It was time for Anthony to release John Kesar, a black indentured servant. But instead, Anthony told Kesar he was extending his time. Kesar left, became employed by the free white man, Robert Parker. Well, Anthony Johnson sued Robert Parker in the Northampton Court in 1654. And in 1655, the court ruled that Anthony Johnson could hold John Kesar indefinitely. And the court gave judicial sanction for blacks to own a slave of their own race. And thus, history has proven that Kesar became the first permanent slave and Johnson the first slave owner. Oh, yes, political correctness must die. Interesting. So bloody interesting. And yet, black lives matter, but they really don't. White lives don't matter. Yellow lives don't matter. Purple lives don't matter. Oh, apparently today the only lives that matter are rainbow lives, but butt lights on the die, you know. Apparently that even Costco and their remaining stock of Bud Light beer. Oh, I'm sorry, Bud Light beer. Has got a little red X on the sections in their store where they're offering Bud Light. When they've got a red X, that's the farewell They will no longer be carrying Bud Light. Another article by Al Benson, Legitimizing Perversion. As I shared with you, I retitled it. Oh, he sent me the original column with the original title. Sodom on the Potomac. I said, now I'm going to retitle it Sodomy on the Potomac. He laughed. It's what it's become. It's absolutely insane. Some of the other pieces we've got posted at Federal Observer right now. You spent your whole life hearing the term Ponzi scheme. Very few people realize that that was named after a man, Charles Ponzi. Something well worth looking at. Talking about Charles Ponzi's scheme and the U.S. entitlement programs, what they have in common. Yeah, back in 1920, Ponzi came up with an investment opportunity to sell international postage stamps, and it was exposed to be a scam. Its basic premise would forever be associated with the man's name. You see, a Ponzi scheme promises investors massive returns on an investment that does not even really exist. Instead, unknown to everyone but the person or the people running it, old investors are paid with money that comes in from new investors. And that setup usually goes undetected until the one day when the well of new investors dries up and the money stops flowing in. Oh, it's well worth the read. And you could do so at federalobserver.com. What can I do, my dear, to catch your ear? Other interesting pieces that we've posted recently. Talking about the news media's blurring of the migrants, what it may be hiding. I live in a state that is so grossly overemployed with illegals, it's sickening. And many have become the boss. Honkies can't get no damn jobs, baby. A superb piece by Tom DeWeese. He sent this to me the other day, and I think I share with you. I had this thing published in less than an hour after I got it. We are in dire trouble in this nation. Farmland lost is farmland lost forever. Now, that catchy phrase is a popular slogan distributed by the Virginia-based land trust called the Piedmont Environmental Council, or PEC. And while it's an accurate statement, apparently the PEC and its like-minded green brethren are only concerned about losing vital farmland to housing developers. And yet, meanwhile, thousands of farmers and ranchers are losing their industries to radical environmental policies supported, promoted by such groups. Obviously, hypocrisy runs deep in the leftist green movement. And yet, farmland is under attack across this nation, mainly under the guise of climate change and environmental protection. It's all bullcrap, folks. And we find that phony chickens now being manufactured. And soon it'll be followed by beef. What's going to happen to the cattle farmers? What's going to happen to people like Alan? Friend, client, who raises cattle for that very purpose, to ensure that people out here have got real beef to eat. And you got that character, little Billy Bob Gates, good friend of Jeffrey Epstein's, who's now one of the largest farmland owners in this country. And his purpose is going to be to provide plastic food. Phony food. Not real food. Because we got to save the planet. For what? Nobody's going to be alive to live on it by eating your plastic, phony, manufactured foods. I don't want the stuff. Guess that just makes me a old fart. But I'll still keep fighting. I hope to God you will too. Climate change. Environmental protection. They ever stop to think that maybe all these new EVs, these electric cars, that's helping to create some climate change too? And when those batteries die, where are they going to get buried? And when those cars die, where are they going to get buried? To destroy Bill Gates' farmland. Now, maybe I'm being facetious. That's not the point. The point is seeing things for the way they really are. It's appalling. Simply appalling. You know, speaking of, Charlie sent me a brief little comment the other day telling me a story about the fact that he was set up to go meet a friend of his for some breakfast at the hipster joint at 40th Street and Camelback in Phoenix. Now, Charlie, kind of like I am, he always tends to arrive early to scope the place. It was early. The joint was empty. Charlie thought he snagged a table and enjoyed a cup of coffee. As he opened the car door, he was assaulted by loud modern music thumping in the outdoor patio dining area, blasting away in the indoor dining area. And the place is empty. But Charlie said the music was so loud, he felt the music. Now, keep in mind, I met Charlie. He's a blues musician. I met him a lot of years ago. See him constantly. I was out doing 3 to 5 blues concerts or get-togethers every week. But like Charlie said, he's an old holdover from the 60s. He loves loud music. But Charlie said this was modern music, a blend of hip-hop, rap, monotonous, repetitive, melodic lines with no rhyme or reason, but the undertone was thumping to carry the unintelligible lyric lines. Charlie said the joint resembled an old auto service center revamped into a hipster cafe. You think it was maybe it was a Goodyear tire center. Whatever works, he guesses. But Charlie made a decision to set aside his immediate impressions. But the subsequent encounter reaffirmed that no one is teaching logic or critical thinking in this country today. He goes up and there's this young 20-something cat at the door, asked how many, and Charlie told him 2. And the guy replied to Charlie, and it told Charlie everything he wanted to know about the establishment and his educational background. And this is kind of how the conversation went. The greeter said, how many? Charlie said, 2, please. And the greeter said, is the other party here? Charlie said, no. Well, then you'll have to wait till the others arrive before I can seat you. What? That's our policy. Charlie rolls his eyes and says, okay. Charlie recalled an axiom from his great-grandfather, which stated, when engaging in a battle of wits, ensure your opponent is armed, or in this case, educated enough to engage. And then Charlotte realized immediately that this young man would never comprehend the logical argument that Charlie would present. So he found a place on the Group W winch out front and waited for his friend to arrive. But here's Charlie's premise. It says, regardless if I'm alone or with one other person, I or we will only require a small table. So why should I wait outside when the cafe's empty? I could easily occupy the table we would probably take, Charlie said, enjoy a cup of coffee, peruse the menu, suffer the annoying loud thumping music. But since Charlie's answer to the first question was two, it would follow mathematically, since I was standing there, that the remainder of two minus one, one. So it's not others, but other person. Oh my God, Charlie says, I can hear my father in my head right now. Charlie's friend showed up. His first comment as they were seated down was, they please turn the music down. Now, they offered printed copies of their bill of fare. However, they recommended scanning the QR code for the smartphone menu. Maybe Charlie's long white beard gave him away. The meal was mediocre, as were the service. Apparently, it reminded the server of an axe murderer she'd seen on television. Maybe Charlie looked too much like Nick Nolte without the Hawaiian shirt. She went from accommodating to surly in a nanosecond. I've got no idea why, Charlie said. Oh, I forgot about the white supremacy and systemic racism in America. A smiling old white dude is obviously in the KKK, and the reason you're waiting tables and not cruising in your Bimmer cabriolet. Charlie's worked as a server. He's bussed tables, cleaned up in restaurants. He knows how hard staff works to service an over-demanding and entitled hipster clientele, so Charlie just adjusts his expectations accordingly. And by the way, the coffee mug handle was sticky. And Charlie's comment above regarding his encounter with the greeter is based on what he sees from our public indoctrination centers. They program the sheep to follow, not to think. Leaning on innocuous canned corporate responses and not repartee. And with that, we come to nearly a conclusion of another week of my being on the air. Miles to go before I sleep. I've had in the last 24 hours probably an hour and a half sleep. I'm not complaining. Much has been going on. I had to go to the airport last night to pick up my wife and granddaughter, and the plane was delayed 2.5 hours due to storms in Chicago. Finally got around to taking a shower after probably 5 days without taking one. I was in and out of the pool a lot, so I didn't care. But I had to do it. And I got out of the shower and something didn't feel right. Why is it getting so warm in the house? Maybe it's not the house. Maybe I'm getting sick. And I came out, looked at the thermostat, and the thermostat was up considerably, and it was going up a couple degrees every few minutes. What the hell is going on here? And I realized we've got a problem with the air conditioning unit in the house. It's only a year old. Push a little button. Sure, why not? Anyway, had to shut the thing off. We went the entire night with no air conditioning. Finally, about 3 in the morning, I got up and I had to get in the car just to feel air conditioning. I went to Denny's. Oh, well. We're going to close out with Celine Dion tonight. Why not? You guys have a good weekend. Don't forget Maggie will be in tomorrow. Lord willing, I'll see you next Tuesday. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett. Discovering truth. I could never worship pagan gods around me. I will only fall on the path that leads me to you, baby. Always.
I would carry the rock of Gibraltar just for you. Lift it like a bear from the beach to the skies. I could build you a bridge that spans the ocean wide. But the greatest gift I gave you would be to stand by your side. Some can criticize and sit in judgment of us, babe, but they can't take away the love that lives inside us. Always, every step I take for you, I will always defend, never pretend that every breath I take.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.